From the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City. I just made Tim jump out of his seat. This is Film Grok. My name is Serge Dalpierre. Next to me I have Tim.
Tim McMillan.
Who just jumped out of his seat. And?
Curtis Nelson, who just sat in his.
And?
Heidi Hilliker. I have not moved from my seat.
And our movie for today is The Road Warrior. Okay, before we get started, the cue point is the very end of the Warner Brothers logo. When it fades to black, pause it there. We'll give you a few minutes to do that. We'll talk about The Road Warrior, and then when we're ready to go, we'll count 3, 2, 1, play, and you guys will play, and technology permitting, everything will be in sync. Or you can just listen to us while you're jogging or riding in the car or at work or something like that. I do that sometimes. So, The Road Warrior. Who wants to go first?
Anybody.
You.
I think Tim should go first. He rarely goes first. How about Tim?
Ooh, Tim. You, I'll go Tim, first. Tim goes first sometime. Go, Tim.
Okay. My memory of Road Warrior is a midnight movie showing in 1981 in Phoenix, Arizona at Metro Center, which was the big hangout, the biggest mall in the state. So if you were cool, that's where you saw the movies. And if you're really cool, you saw a midnight movie. So I go and see Road Warrior, not have ever seen, I never saw Mad Max, so I didn't know what I was in for at all.
Were you cool?
Oh, I was way too cool.
Okay.
Way too cool for school, please. So I show up there with my brother, and the place is packed with these adrenaline junkies and everyone needing a big fix, you know, for their weekend. And this thing unspools. The movie ends. Everyone races out of the theater, goes to the parking lot to leave, and it was just like the movie. Everyone drove just like the movie. I'm not kidding. I had never seen the effects of movies to this extreme till I saw this. Till I saw Road Warrior. So I'm in the parking lot, and everyone is just screaming, you know, doing Brody's, doing donuts around each other, and trying to play chicken with everyone else and trying to kill each other. And I said, oh my gosh, this and movie had quite the effect.
Who was humongous? I mean, who was well, the humongous in the group?
I was before I showed up, and I was after I showed up. But,
that is awesome. That is awesome.
Anyway, no, as far as living a movie, that whole audience went ballistic over this thing. It created everyone's inner apocalyptic Mad Max came out to play after that movie. So I said, wow, this is, and I'd never seen a movie like it. This is one of my favorite action movies. Always will be.
Sweet. That is awesome. And
my apologies. That was my phone, so I have now put it on vibrate. So
you are.
Uh-oh, Serge.
Sorry.
You're fired.
Okay, see you, bye.
So everyone call Serge. Give him a thrill.
Well, how about you, Serge? What was your first experience with Road Warrior?
1981, too. Saw it at the KB's Theater, KB Georgetown Square at the corner of Georgetown, old Georgetown Road and Democracy. In fact, it's interesting. I remember once you said it, I'm like, oh, that's where I saw it. And, yeah, I'd never seen Mad Max, and I saw it, and I was like, holy crap, what the hell is this? This is awesome. Of course, yeah, and of course, you know, your adrenaline's all like, I need to drive like them, and it's the post-apocalypse and all this kind of cool stuff.
But
I really, really
it.
Enjoyed it. And, of course, it's like, what the hell is Mad Max? So, of course, I went back to the video store, and I think video stores were starting then. And I found Mad Max, and, of course, it was in the awful American-dubbed version. And mm-hmm. watching, like, this is related, but okay, okay, mm-hmm. fine. I liked it much, many years later when they actually came out with the non-dubbed version. Much preferred. I mean, I needed the subtitles a few times, but otherwise it was pretty cool. So I like it. But I kind of prefer Thunderdome.
Well, I well, we shouldn't even breach that.
There's a
but
debate.
Like, that's interesting debate. That's like kind of like a Blade Runner debate about replicant or non-replicant and everything else whenever you talk about Mad Max. I liked the American dub version because Australians have a very high, tingy kind of an accent, so they talk really high up here. And so, like, that big dude that's kind of like the sergeant or Mad Max's commander is, like, whenever he's lecturing him in the American dubbed version, it's like, Max, you got to do that. And he's got a very gravelly voice like you would expect that character to have. Then when you get the Australian version, he's like, hey, Max. And he's, like, 6'6", giant guy, like, totally lecturing him. And he's, like, he's playing that lectury sergeant part. And it's just laughable to me. Mm. I'm like, okay, right. I like the American version better.
I mean, it's okay. You know, I didn't mind the dub version too much. But I mean, just usually I like, and that's just me.
Yeah, I agree. I just, like, generally,
I like the gen. Yeah. Like if I watch mm-hmm. a foreign film, I like watching it with the non-dubbed version with the subtitles, just because I like to hear the voices.
Right, what naturally comes from this person.
The full performance.
Well, the full performance as it was originally intended, not the dubbed performance. Not that the dubbed performance could actually be bad. And actually, this brings up a really funny thing from that me and my friends once had a theory about Jerry Lewis, that actually, you know, why Jerry Lewis was big in France was not because he was really, I mean, there was the slapstick, but then actually our theory was that the guy who actually did Jerry Lewis's voice was so good and so funny. That's what made him so popular.
The voice artist, rather than
that was our theory. I doubt if it's true, but hey, it was a cool thing.
You could take some time and, you know, run a poll in France and see if your theory rings true.
Le Jerry Lewis ID.
Well, since this film did come out in 1981, I was not yet born. The first
little baby.
Yeah, no, not even that.
Not even that.
Not even that. I don't even think I was a thought yet, a twinkle in my mom's eye or whatever. But the first film that I actually saw was Beyond Thunderdome of this series with my dad. It was like we got it right after it came out in the video store, and then I kind of like Tarantino'd it back. And watched Road Warrior, and then I saw Mad Max. And I'm pretty sure the first time I saw Mad Max, I didn't understand anything they were saying until like years later. Like to me, I sometimes just remember it being no talking. Until I watched it later on in my life, I actually thought no one ever talked. It was a silent movie. Strange. But it was another one of those movies, those great action movies that I watched with my dad when I was growing up, and Road Warrior is great. It has completely established for me what I think the post-apocalyptic world will be like, and my love for those kinds of movies. You know, I love that genre.
Post-apocalyptic, I think we're pretty close right now.
Yeah, well.
We don't need apocalypse to get there.
Well, yeah.
Either way.
We're right around the corner.
And I'm sure once we get there, it's going to be just like the Mad Max films.
Sure, why not?
I hope it's as entertaining. That would be a perk.
But I couldn't drive, you know, after I first saw it because I was just a little kid. So
there was no you just got on your big wheel and just started running over people.
I had a Power Wheels, a Power Wheels Jeep. So I just, you know, ran that around, you know, over the lumps in the grass because that's about as much as it can handle. It really runs much better on pavement. So I don't know.
Very cool.
Oh, those big wheels are fun.
They are fun.
Yep. Interesting. I'm just curious. So you saw Thunderdome first, because I think all of us saw Road Warrior before we saw Thunderdome. So you actually had the reverse experience.
Yeah.
And what did you think of Road Warrior when having seen Thunderdome?
I thought it was a lot more serious, obviously. You know, like for me, it was a much more, I guess it seemed like a lot like more heavy of a movie. Because, you know, Thunderdome is just so like the costumes and the music, and it's very like theatrical. And the kids, you know, like... As a kid watching that, I had someone to really relate to. So it was different, but I still really liked it. I think, you know, I'll never like it as much as Thunderdome. But
because you always identify with that little tribe in the desert.
Yeah, that's me. You know? I want to get an airplane. And
well, that's the thing. And when we eventually do Thunderdome, we can talk about this some more. But actually, I mean, I think they're kind of two different movies, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Thunderdome was directed by Miller and... someone else. I think Miller just directed the action sequences, but I thought the way the mythology was expanded from what had been presented here was really cool. I mean, this had its place. This was after Mad Max and definitely was a step ahead, because Mad Max was definitely pre-apocalypse. It's just like things are, you know, like kind of a little dangerous, you know, in the Australian outback and that kind of thing. So, shall we?
We shall.
Let's go. Okay.
I'm excited.
So we are paused and we're going to count down. So, and we're going to play three. 2-1 play.
And we will be watching this on Blu-ray.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah, new. Kennedy Miller.
Shall we talk about the elephant in the room right now, or will we?
What Mel Gibson?
Mad Max.
See, this is 2. Mad Max 2, actually.
Yeah.
That was the Australian title.
Well,
that's what it is.
Well, it is, actually. It is Mad Max 2. And we only knew it as Road Warrior here.
Well, to bring up that elephant and talk about Mel Gibson. The director, George Miller. Excuse me. I had a brain fart there a second.
Okay.
But George Miller, in not defending Mel Gibson, but after all this came out, he was like, listen, one thing that you can't say negative about Mel Gibson is what makes him such a good actor. And he said what makes most great actors is the depth they bring to their characters, and usually that comes from a lived life, whether that's faulted or not. And he was a complex guy. He's like, I love him. I got along great with him. He's a great guy, mm-hmm. and he has so many great qualities, but those little things he has that are the chinks in the armor are big chinks.
Oh, and
so
right. And now they're giant
I'm
holes.
Taking, I'm not quoting George Miller, but that's what I got out of it, whereas right. like he, that's what makes him interesting as a character.
Right.
Yeah, but, I'm going to talk about his film work, and that's pretty much what I would be able to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean,
I don't know anything else. I don't know him as a man.
I mean, I think he's a great actor, great presence. I mean, and this definitely, helped make his, this made his career.
Oh, awesome. For sure, yeah.
Well, I mean, on that note, a lot of people don't know that in this movie, and to show you how great of a character he is, he only has 16 lines of dialogue in this whole film.
Oh, wow.
That's like a spaghetti western. So like you're talking about, you talk, the less you talk, the more presence you have.
You talking about capturing the audience, whether it, I don't think it's just directing. It's definitely when he walks on screen, you're like, okay, I'm going to watch this guy.
Yeah.
And may I say, I love any film that starts out in 4:3 and then mm-hmm. blasts the audience out of its chairs when it goes to 2:35.
Yeah.
I love that every time. It gets me.
And I mean, this is, this is 81, but I think this is, it's a fine way to start a film.
I didn't need to see Mad Max. I mean, this brought me up to speed quite nicely.
Oh, sure. And probably, most people in America hadn't. So
right,
and what's interesting, you hear George Miller talk about this opening sequence. If I remember correct, this is all public domain footage. Like this is all footage that he just ripped. And he took it because it's available to the average person.
But this is all old footage. I mean, it's not from like the '80s or anything. He said, "Well, I'll take older footage, and it still relates." I mean, that's like World War II. Oh my God!
So even though they had a little bit more money than Mad Max, they were still shooting on a.
Now here's our film.
Now he's got the Mad Max.
Yeah, in 4:3. Nice.
Which, I mean, we'll talk about the camera work after, but that movie, Mad Max, introduced
the
motorcycle in the guy's head.
Yeah, I love the overlay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it introduced great camera work in terms of car chases. It just
He's such a little kid. I'm sorry. But look at him.
He was like 19 or 20 when he did Mad Max. And he's only like 21 or 22. They almost...
Oh wow!
Immediately went into Mad Max 2 to show you that the depth of life he brought through his eyes and everything else before he even walks on screen at that young of an age.
Yeah.
I mean, could you imagine half the actors at that age trying to pull this type of a character off? I mean, even Clint Eastwood, when he did all the spaghetti westerns, were in his mid to late 30s.
Right.
Now, this is new footage that was not from Mad Max, where we're seeing him with his injured leg.
And may I say, if you're going to do a low-budget movie, set it in the outdoors.
For sure.
I mean, just get an empty, barren patch of land, come up with a story, and that's exactly what they do here. Look at this shot.
It's a great opening. Unbelievable opening. Hey,
yeah.
This is a point where we could talk about when we were at the Egyptian and we saw this again.
Right there,
seeing that.
Yep. Look at that. And that shot, POV on the... Yep. That's where you're like, widescreen, hello.
That's right. And you've got the you've basically got the camera right at the level of the road.
Wow, this looks great in HD.
See?
I've never seen this like on Blu-ray or anything this quality.
They did a nice remaster on this. And Dean Semler is the DP. And for a low-budget film, oh my gosh, amazing stuff that they did.
Amazing footage.
It's one of my favorite action films that holds up, beyond holds up. It's just awesome.
And one thing you'll notice about this movie, that they fill the camera, like even that shot, look how full the camera is whenever you could easily have a blank slate. So
Very little negative space.
Yeah, the art director is Graham Grace Walker, and I'll tell you a story about him later that I got a chance
Grace?
To meet
him. Oh, has three names. Graham Grace Walker?
Yeah, his nickname's Grace.
Yeah. And, I saw it in the opening credits.
Yeah, but man, they fill the screen.
I like how the dog knows I'm hiding now.
Right. I love this, though. I love this storytelling approach to an apocalyptic situation where you have a dog. That this gets used a lot in stories, but it's very...
John Wayne and Hondo used
I Am Legend did it with Will Smith.
Well, I mean, that dog, by the way, they picked up out of a pound that was going to get killed. And it's an Australian cattle dog, or a Queensland heeler, they call it. And I've always wanted one ever since seeing this film.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Ever since.
I just don't like the way how slow this film begins.
Oh, my gosh. All this build-up before the action.
Exposition.
Stunts are unbelievable.
Really, they are.
But the camera work George Miller has in this film is ridiculous. And like the one thing he knows about action.
I love this. The better comes up right to here.
How about that? That he rolls into camera like that. Man, that is awesome. And
nice composition.
Steps
nice.
Out. Yeah.
Look, we've got a crane. Let's use a crane out
there. See once again
how
how full the whole screen is. Mm-hmm. It's not empty. It's just and all. It's so much
it's
shot
all
like
information.
A Western.
Yeah.
But speaking as a DP,
the sign.
It's your biggest nightmare to make the light match. Because mm-hmm. you've been outdoors the whole time. So you've got 8 in the morning, 3 in the afternoon, overcast, right. clear. But I'll give it that. It's so well done, I don't care.
I like how the arrow's still in his arm. He's just like, mm-hmm. yeah.
All right, I can already tell I'm probably going to wear a leather jacket tomorrow. So if you see me, you'll know.
Just so you know, don't ever wear leather in a 100-degree Australian desert. Probably
but
have dehydration
you do if you're really,
really
cool.
Yeah, okay, that's
so
right.
So to speak. But you do if you're riding a bike, because if you fall off that bike, you want that leather jacket.
Yeah, and if you're fighting people.
Between you and the road. Yeah.
Well, also, what's great about this film is we talked about the 16 lines of dialogue by Mel Gibson. There's so much storytelling going on in this opening sequence with so little dialogue
cinematic.
And exposition. Like right there, we know that he's digging up this he needs that gasoline. So by him dabbing it, I mean, doing all that little stuff is amazing.
And may I say, where'd they get this guy? The guy with the Mohawk? I mean, where did they get him? He is so awesome.
A penitentiary.
Crazy.
He's all presence. He's total presence. I love that. He really committed himself to this role.
Wow.
Did they get him out of a pub and say, hey, you want to make a movie?
Another one of, again, back on, telling the story with just actions, he pulls the arrow out and he saves it because having ammo, having weapons, that's a luxury. You've got to keep
survival.
Everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's the use of a zoom.
And that was fine. Of course, it's Australian filmmaking back in the day of when they just were so far behind as far as filmmaking goes, and they just would go over the top on everything. He's got a gay lover on the back of his seat. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't care, and he's blonde hair, and just. But it's awesome.
As theatrical as anything. As far as George Miller, I love this, and I love the Lithgow segment in Twilight Zone.
Yes.
For his direction.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I thought George Miller would be doing a lot more stuff, and I was sorry that he didn't follow up.
What I like about this whole beginning is how they've basically introduced. I mean, if you come into it without any context, you don't know it's post-apocalyptic. I mean, you basically get all the little clues as to things are just a little off.
Well, you do now. If you don't know by now.
What I'm saying is if. I know. What I'm saying is if you.
I thought we were watching Sophie's Choice.
If you ignore the whole beginning where, they basically lay everything out for you, but if you're just watching the movie itself with the car chase and everything.
Sure.
In other words, they're not just in the outback. Definitely things have progressed on.
Mm-hmm. I like the use of the music box right here. Sorry, I just wanted to interject that before we got past
to
it.
To go into the, it's included in the score and everything.
Yeah,
out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
nice
one
filter.
Thing, I mean.
Yeah. Nice landscape.
I was like. Heidi and everybody else, I saw this first. I saw this first. I'd never seen Mad Max, mm-hmm. and it does one thing that most sequels don't do, which is it survives on its own.
Right.
I
think I haven't seen Mad Max, but what I've seen clips, and to me, I think Road Warrior is a sequel that outdoes its.
Oh yeah.
The first film.
Oh,
correct?
For sure. It's almost it, how many nowadays.
Examples, how many examples are there of that a sequel blows away the first film?
I think if nowadays Mad Max would have been like a short that they would have done in order to get funding for Road Warrior.
Yeah.
It would have been set up that way.
Transformers 2, come on.
Oh, I said correctly.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, the first time I ever saw this in HD, I was actually shocked because I had never noticed the nude chick on the tail fin of this helicopter, and she's a 1981 Playmate. She wasn't the Playmate of the Year, but you can see it on the tail fin. And how I missed that in my young teenage years, I have no idea. But
you were just so distracted by all the violence.
I'm telling you, I was so excited by what I was seeing. I guess I had man love, and I was just like, wow.
No,
Look right there. Bam! I've got that on my computer.
Holy crap.
Look at that.
She's totally naked. I think I've never noticed that either, which is strange.
Never seen that.
Never saw it until I saw it in HD.
Well, because
you
were watching it on small TVs, basically. Right, maybe 13-inch or 20-inch TVs, from VHS.
Yeah.
Literally the boob tube.
Yeah, no, Curtis and I saw this at the Egyptian Theater when they released this. Yeah.
In
it was
LA,
wonderful.
Yeah.
You got to see it in the theater.
Yeah, and it was awesome. It was fun.
This guy's great, too. Great casting.
Yep.
Yeah. Wonderful casting. I mean, they make maximum impact with a lot of underwritten roles, actually.
Yeah.
It's all because of good casting.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a big actor in Australia,
Bruce
even
Spence?
Around this time.
Yeah. He was actually recently on Legend of the Seeker.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. A show I love that got canceled.
He was in 12 Monkeys. He was one of the people at the sent Bruce Willis on the mission.
I mean, he's definitely good at playing an eccentric.
Yeah. I will try and not quote all the lines in Australian accent because me and my brothers growing up, that's all we did was like, looks like we got some gasoline, eh? just crazy stuff. Just awesome. Love it.
And I can't even begin to fathom the logistics of having to film this. Everything's outdoors, correct? The entire film.
Yep. Well, you just got to match. I mean, it looks, who knows?
Because when you shoot on location, that's the hardest work day there is. Yeah. And this whole thing is outdoors on location.
And it's great. And it's great locations.
Look how vacant the background is, but look how full the foreground is. And they chose that for that, obviously.
But also they have the tree. I mean, the trees are barren.
Perfect, too.
Yeah, everything's death.
And the costumes in this movie are just so rad. They really are. I mean, they could just start a movement of people just cosplaying to dress like this post-apocalyptic
Heidi, you know there is actually, if you look this up online, you can Google, there is a Mad Max.
What?
Totally. There's it's not Burning Man, but it's like supposed to be like Burning Man, but for like Mad Max cosplay.
Is that real life?
I'm totally serious. It's late October.
I think I might actually try
to go.
Don't judge me, but I think I'm going to do that.
So by the time you guys hear this, likely Heidi will have gone to this thing.
Wow.
I love this dog.
And I'm going to wear pink sneakers and ripped up yellow pants. Yeah.
And what's funny is there's two women in here that look really 80s now when you look at them.
Oh, when they've got the crimped hair.
I go, wow. And it's so funny when you're in the 80s.
I'm telling you that like women are always what date film.
Yeah.
Is because they always give them some sort of
the hairstyles.
It's always the hairstyles.
It's the hair.
You mean Cleopatra didn't have the hair
and the cell phones.
Seriously?
And the cell phones.
Or the lack thereof.
Well, I mean, one point to make on great storytelling was without a whole lot of, with no exposition whatsoever, just visual storytelling is him setting that bomb underneath his car. Now you know that's there. And it plays out in the last third of the film.
I like how he's tied up.
with the gun and the dog. It's like this.
And this that's wonderful.
This dog sells it so much.
So awesome. Yeah.
This dog's a better actor than Ben.
Tongue
Affleck
in cheek.
And Geely.
Look at him. There's lots of tongue-in-cheek stuff in this movie.
Yeah. Oh, watch this. This is so great.
Oh, rabbit.
And the dog looks. And he looks back. Oh, I'm still
Don't
watching
get excited.
You, sir.
Don't get excited, doggy.
This is so good.
Look at the wipes. Like, Star Wars wipes there.
Like totally.
Oh, yeah. This is all about economy. It's like, we need to get from here to there, and that's it. We're going.
The music
nice.
Is great.
Reveal. Look at that reveal.
Yeah. Is that
That's a nice.
Sweet.
That's a nice. Crane, techno crane shot.
They right had to the be up on those
Boom
rocks
shot.
Like that at that angle.
Yeah, look
I
at
love
that.
All that dust.
Amazing.
Okay, guys, we're going up that cliff up there. Crane goes up. It's like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
It's not awesome. Easy.
And I think I heard also that like Mel Gibson cut his own hair before doing this.
I can see that.
So it's that way, you know, to
more
have
authentic.
The, yeah.
Oh, it looks that way, though.
It's got to be rough.
I mean, it's not like you're going to be able to go to the barber shop.
I mean, what's great. I mean, what's really amazing is how they created their own mythology for this. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd never seen a post-apocalyptic film like this. I think before that we'd had, I guess, Planet of the Apes was probably the biggest one before that. I don't know if you can think of any others.
But a lot of them were like society has completely changed into like a new. I mean, which of course in this it has too. But this is almost like the lack of a society, whereas in other post-apocalyptic movies, it's moving towards like some sort of futuristic rebirth. Like pre this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true. You know, like Planet of the Apes, it done something else. And also, I was thinking of on TV, there was a film called Genesis 2 with Alex Cord, which did the same thing.
There Gene
was a,
Roddenberry.
Right. Yeah. And basically, everything had blown up, and then they were trying to recreate the world.
Yeah.
I guess things. But this actually changed it in showing how, with the depletion of essentially, you know, nuclear war, I guess, but depletion of supplies, what happens?
Well, it's almost
and
more
it just,
authentic.
It's just a scratch. It is, actually.
You know, which is
yeah.
why I think it stands as probably the post-apocalyptic movie of all time. You know, I think that...
Well, it did add the whole element of, okay, we're going to have lots of car chases, too.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And make it all... I mean, it did also tap into the whole thing about anxiety about oil, which at the time
yes,
was still
the
around.
Yes, fossil fuels.
Right. And still is.
Oh, yeah.
I talk about universal and ageless. The philosophy of this movie as far as what is valuable and what means life.
Right.
Look at the political scene these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, because
give me a break. This is timeless stuff here.
I mean, because if you look at other post-apocalyptic films, which are different, they have their different mythology, like Book of Eli or The Road. I mean, that's definitely about, well, complete depletion of supplies, and then they get into the whole thing of cannibalism, which I think is we've only started getting into in terms of, you know, yeah.
You forgot the Omega Man. For post-apocalyptic world.
Yes. Post absolutely.
That's 1971.
And that was about, like, decimation, but it's about one man versus, I guess, trying to guide where society's going. Here, it's a matter of, like, we're just trying to survive.
Yeah.
And actually protect the oil, which is what this turns into.
Wouldn't it be fun if you edited the Omega Man and Road Warrior together? And you
did a mix.
And did one epic of that Charlton Heston and Mad Max were in the same time frame?
Talk about the dog out-acting everybody again here in this scene right here. By the way, that was like 24 minutes into the film before Mel Gibson had his first line of dialogue right there just a minute ago.
Yeah. Yep.
And I like this. He's got the dog food, and what does he do? He eats it.
By the way, he really ate this dog food.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
I mean, it's just meat.
But that's the thing. I mean, this is what he'd do.
Maybe this is what drove Mel Gibson crazy.
Oh, man.
Oh, but look how delicious that is.
He's like, this is food. And, of course, the dog's like, I want my food.
Baby. That dog is awesome. Yeah, not happy.
Great shot on the dog.
Again, yeah.
And the other guy, everyone wants.
And Bruce Spence.
Yeah. How could you not look at this film and see that how great of a DP that Dean Simler was and turns out to be?
Yeah.
And the crew that kept his lenses clean and his equipment clean through this. Kudos to them.
He's just got a wooden spoon that he just keeps, you know.
Yeah.
Just right.
I just got it in my
pocket.
It becomes one of those things like, well, you were talking about post-apocalyptic and what becomes valuable, you know, what becomes wealth and, well, oil and survival. So they grasp these, like later whenever when he's going to be frisking one of the dead guys, mm-hmm. it's like an old Western where he's only finding what he might need.
Right.
Yet that man, that was his value. He valued everything he had on his person, yet Mel Gibson's throwing half of it away and, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. And it's interesting.
And you know what?
That's great. He probably really did try to take it. And that dog was like,
I'm sure, pal.
You know what I am loving just while we're watching this is the fact that we're listening to each other in the headphones. I'm not hearing much of the movie, and we don't need to hear much of the movie.
Well, no, because
it's
a visual.
So visual.
Movie, yeah.
It's great.
It's excellent.
Visually,
it's so
awesome
cinematic.
Visual.
It's great for commentary.
That's right.
And that's exactly what they were thinking, you know, when they were
nice
making
shot.
This film.
That's right.
Yeah. I wonder if this is Morning for Night.
And I like also the way he's got just that one shock of white hair.
Yeah, I love that. I almost brought that up earlier.
On his left brow.
Yep. Yeah.
And here's our major set. This is the only set they had to build.
Yeah, which they absolutely destroyed.
It's like a Bond film. You build a fortress and you blow it up.
Well, that and the roads, but yeah.
Look at all the cars.
Shot. It's fantastic.
As far as, yeah.
Look at that.
That's a great shot.
It always blew me away. Just
that's a 2-3 lighting shot.
That is not CG, man.
Nope. And look
nice
at all
exposure.
The guys' little fires down here.
Nice
I never
exposure.
Noticed those whenever I was a
look
kid.
Look at the light on Mel Gibson, the guy in the lower left. It's perfectly balanced with everything.
Could you imagine how far back they must be to get everybody in focus like that? I mean,
right.
how far over their shoulder are they? They must be 50 yards behind them.
Yeah, pretty far back.
Yeah, you can see the light they have pumped on him here.
Yeah. But it's very nice.
Oh, it's so beautiful. Like, I'm so glad that, you know, in remastering this for Blu-ray that they didn't just decide to, like, you know, George Lucas it and add a bunch of crap in the background.
Oh. CG this, CG that.
Right. Because it looks just so good just the way it
is. Look at how rich that is.
And this was a tough remaster. The sources are really banged up for this, I guess.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well, no, it's not in good shape at all.
They did a great job.
Well, sure.
I just think it's interesting that basically there's staking them out. I mean, they're just watching what's going on. They're not approaching them or anything.
Well, it's smart, you know.
It's taking its time.
I mean, that's survival.
I like that.
You know, observing,
but I like
being calculated.
I like that the film is taking the time to do that. Mm-hmm. That's good.
I love this.
Right,
just
that's
a
basically
bit,
yeah.
I keep bringing up this damn dog, but it's like you see him wake up, and it's almost like they're interconnected between the two of them. It's always been kind of like a man thing to have a dog by his side, and you really don't have to speak to it. It kind of knows what you want and your needs, and they're looking out for each other. And it's like the dog wakes up, sees that there's action going on, and then Mel Gibson, it's almost like, hey, mentally, hey, wake up.
There's symbiotic.
Get up here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's time to look.
And I mean, this is interesting. In a way, this is like a Western, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's totally a Western.
Instead
of horses, we got cars.
Yep.
Exactly. They're on the frontier, and all the bad guys are circling around, and they're basically, you know, they're just waiting for their moment to get by them.
Yeah, when Curtis said Mel Gibson only has 16 lines of dialogue, it reminded me of Eastwood in the you know, Dollars trilogy or the old Spaghetti Western.
Well, if you look at the story, it's very similar to Pale Rider in the sense that he comes in to help this band of rebel or these little helpless people get up on their feet and kind of protect what they own, which is, you know, Pale Rider, their gold mines, and in this, the fuel.
Yeah.
Which actually, then, Pale Rider is one of my favorite Clint Eastwood Westerns.
Great movie. Yeah. Great movie. But look at this action.
And Brian May did the score, right?
Yeah.
Brian May.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want like a deep
I love this score, but didn't you make an off-crack comment to me that there was like a high school band that like
I'm
did this score for
it? I'm not going to sing it, but he has a thing with a downbeat that he does. And it's all through the film.
Nice chaps,
and it's
by the
just
way.
Hilarious.
Sorry, back to the costumes.
In 1981, those were very nice chaps. When I saw this movie, I'm like, what?
This is where David Lee Roth got his outfit for the 1984
tour. That he pulls out.
Well, I love how they tell this whole story through a lens of like telescope and binoculars.
Yeah.
And this whole little sequence is just masterful filmmaking.
And I love how much they move the camera for impact stuff. I love that. There's lots of dolly in, push in, push in.
Well, which, you know, basically Miller was using the technique that Spielberg used well in the earlier part of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, because, you know, you can shoot this whole thing on sticks. You're out on location. Let's bang this out. It's low budget. Yeah. And yet Dean Simler, like, oh, let's push in here, push in that. Crane, do this. Nice.
And it's violent as hell.
Look, another push in.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It was
what I love.
But even for the
you and your dad, good times.
But for the time, it was very, very violent. I mean,
yeah, really.
But this is totally Australian filmmaking. I mean, I forget the name of the documentary. They've got a great documentary out called "Not Quite Hollywood," I believe, and it is so good because it shows the trajectory of Australian filmmaking, and of course this is a huge part of it, and they talk about they talk about how Australia just didn't follow the rules and the guidelines that Hollywood followed.
It's out of the box film.
Well, they just reinvented it for themselves.
Well, of course they're a different society. They have different things that they find interesting, or you know, I mean, it's just a different place.
Well, what's great is that kind of storytelling was able to translate to here. I mean, there's a whole bunch of other independent films that came out of Australia in the early 80s. Yeah. Peter Weir came out of Australia, one of my favorite directors. Yeah.
Well, by the way, I love this score, and I love how that score builds right here and just really amps up the tension.
It is good. I like the score through here,
I mean,
too.
It is. It really is a movie that's all visual and score-driven.
So to speak. It's a driven film.
And now now this is interesting that he decides now to get involved.
Yeah, just leaves. Well, no, he sees his opportunity, and this is his opportunity.
Would you say
this guy's out on the road by himself? I got it. Boom, he jumped into action.
Would you say classify Mad Max as an anti-hero?
Oh, totally.
Yeah, totally.
He's
really
out for himself to begin with. It isn't until, you know,
I mean,
and that's
even
usually
in
the way
Thunderdome, he's still kind of
he's on his own.
Battling with that.
See, this is interesting. This guy, Bruce Spence's character, he sees this happening, and he's so shocked and taken aback by it. The interesting thing, he's had to have seen some bad shit.
Yeah.
But even this is really worse for him.
And probably if you are the kind of person who maintained a semblance of your humanity,
nice shot.
Then it's hard to, you know, see it any time.
Yeah.
Even if it's the 100th time.
Ooh. Hmm.
See, even though there are some ridiculous things in this film as far as like, you know, the cleanliness of some of these people, but look how dirty this film is. And that's where I don't like Mad Max Thunderdome as much, because they cleaned everybody up. You're still and it's like, look how lived in this place looks, and just dank and dirty and just downtrodden, and that's what I love about it.
I like this guy. This is a guy that catches on fire at the end, right?
No. He passes away right here in a few minutes.
Oh, he passes away. Oh.
Yeah. No.
They darted
him to
there's
a scene where someone in his gloves catch on fire. Is the,
No. He dies here in just a few minutes.
I know they did not come back with those arrows.
Yeah.
They just left him.
And this little kid, I went to elementary school with a guy that reminds me of this kid. And I won't say his name to protect his identity, but my Lord, I just was at my 20-year reunion.
Get it, Boomerang.
He was there.
Okay, I'm going to say this is maybe the first time I ever saw a Boomerang. I can't guarantee it, but I'm pretty sure this is probably the first experience in my life that I knew what a boomerang was.
And you're like, this is what they play with for the games on picnics? It's a death. It's an instrument of death.
I always thought it was a weapon.
Oh, no.
This kid is great.
But what's great is that they actually, you know, the characters, I mean, even that they created this kind of character is great.
I love the fact that he's the one that's telling the story.
Yeah.
Which
we find out at the end. Yeah.
By the way, the blower on the car doesn't work.
Right.
So it's just aesthetic?
It's just for visual.
Right.
Yeah. So, and whenever I had an opportunity, I'll skip how I got to talk with the art director, Graham Walker, and he was saying that most of the stuff didn't work. Like the cars could barely run and they just, just had to, push start a lot of them.
Because they were all like junkyard cars,
yeah,
huh?
And he said the same thing about Mad Max's car. He's just barely could get the thing going, and all that stuff is for aesthetics.
I like how they're all in white.
Yeah, I like it's their, very their tribal.
Oh yeah, right. Well, it's a total hero and bad guy theme.
Yeah,
you know? I mean, obviously.
But also if you're going to be in the desert, you want to wear white.
White, and it's camouflage. You know, it's white, it's browns, it's earth tones. There's a lot of netting.
Here's our crimp girl behind us here.
Yeah,
one of them. There's another one too.
Yeah, the blonde here.
The young blonde, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but that is hilarious.
I love all that mesh, how they all kind of have a little bit of it.
But see how they're in the white and it's still kind of dirty. And,
yeah.
It's,
right.
You know, it,
and yet they had total artistic license. I mean, everything is a hodgepodge. So it's not that it was all set out this way. They said, let's just combine this with this with this with this anyway, and it works.
Yep.
You just take a bunch of other random stuff, throw it together, because everything is, you know what I mean? There's no massive through line.
Right.
Logic-wise, to it all.
I like the guy who's being the...
So on a low budget, it works.
Okay, that chick's hair is totally 80s. Although, I can see someone rocking that now.
Yeah, why not?
We're watching a lot of, BBC America lately. They're into that. Look at this guy.
It's the headband that makes it the 80s.
This guy's got herpes all over his lips and stuff, and not him. Not...
But I like the guy that's actually hanging in the sling or whatever, that they're moving him around.
Yeah.
They've all got great hair, man.
I mean, how fun to be able to say we have to create a world... Now let's create the inhabitants of this world and just go with your imagination.
Yep.
Just say, I have a guy hanging from a support because his legs don't work. Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, but I think but there's also a logic to it. You know, there's imagination and logic.
Mm-hmm.
If a guy didn't have his legs, what would he do in our world?
But the imagination just to think it up, to do that.
Right,
yeah. I mean, that's great.
Yeah, there's the guy with the herps.
Another great tool that George Miller put in there was these people are still poor people, and so they're going back to these archaic weapons of bows and arrows,
right.
And like you see later, even Humongous, he's got just a few bullets for his big gun that he can only pull out and use, and you have to choose in which times you use it, and we then later find out that Mel Gibson doesn't even have bullets in his gun,
which is another great thing for a low budget film.
Yeah.
To say we have to go back to basics and post-apocalyptic, and we don't have the money to do huge expensive weapons and set design, so let's just do the basic stuff.
And this
guy's
great. This guy's a great actor, the the one playing the leader of the band here.
Yeah.
I can't think of his character name now, but really, really good.
He knows what the car is. I like that.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. With this dog. And then the kid has an instant connection with the dog, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Because kids' animals are like the same. It's so cute.
Well, if it says anything about somebody's character, George Miller did say that this dog loved Mel Gibson. So they always say that dogs can tell good character. So maybe that is a good defense for Mel.
Right.
Yeah.
The dog defense.
I like how the pigs are running.
Nice. Look at that POV with the rabbit.
Yeah.
This old guy with it.
Even the pigs know it's trouble.
And there's our downbeat in the music. If you listen to those strikes, that's what happens on the whole last 15 minutes of the film. It's just that huge downbeat.
Oh.
Well,
that's the Road Warrior sound.
Oh, I love that. I love that they use that bus as that, like, drawbridge.
And what's
the gate type action. Yeah. It's just smart.
What's great storytelling in this part as well is that we saw everything from the outside, like what must this place be like, and now we're seeing how they live and their inner workings and their defense mechanisms and how everything functions and how they have their own little parts, and we've been introduced to all these people and we already know who they are and through this small 5-10 minute scene.
Yeah, you see those rocks back there, that's where they were before.
Sure.
I mean, they even kept that
so
in the shot.
Away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now, right.
And
exactly.
now we're in the belly of the beast, and we get to see what's going on and the hierarchy
of
this
group.
It's so
medieval, actually, this group, this like tribe. It's very, very medieval.
It is. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's basically
defend feudal. The castle.
It's even less than feudal. F-E-U-D-A-L.
Yeah, and then once again, we don't have to be told. They don't beat us over the head with this. These are two of the guys that tried to escape with the other group that was in
You know what that reminds me of, actually, with the people strapped on there, and it's awful, but it reminds me of Serenity with the Reavers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It reminds me of hunting season in Michigan.
Oh. Really?
But here's the thing. It's such a thing that human beings would do. Like, hey, we have your people now. now we have the upper hand and you have to listen to us and we're going to bait you out.
And may I say that, you know, things that become cliche, we're looking at this in 2010, but when I saw this in 81, I had never seen anything like this.
Oh, there hadn't never been anything like that. And you know what was great also?
That's what has to be taken into consideration.
That's a great shot, by the way.
What's also good is they actually took, I mean, basically the fashion styles. I mean, the mohawk had just like come in as like basically part of punk couture, the look, and was actually integrated into all this, which it hadn't been, you know, in mainstream Hollywood filmmaking at all.
But it also is even cool because I feel like a lot of this does tap back into, like, ancient cultures. Like, you know, we were saying, like, medieval times, or, I mean, this isn't even ancient, but, like, Wild West times. You know, even in, like, kind of, like, gladiator-type times, mm-hmm. where even something like a mohawk would have maybe possibly been worn in that era.
And may I say, I love how they made that big muscle guy, like, have radiation sickness or whatever. Look at his head. Just mm-hmm. for aesthetic effect, the back of his head, all his hair is falling.
The fact that he actually has steroids, though, in the desert of the, you know, that's the thing. This guy, his name was, I got the list in front of me, so I don't think I'm some genius. It's Kyle Nyssen is, I believe, how you say it, but it's K-J-I-L-L. And he was, like, a Swedish bodybuilder, powerlifter, and he came to Australia and dabbled in films. If you ever want to see what his face looks like, watch the movie, the pirate movie with, what the hell is the guy, Christopher Atkins.
And Christopher McNichol.
Yeah. And he's one of the pirates in it. He's actually a handsome guy. Christy McNichol and Christopher Atkins are in this musical movie called The Pirate Movie. And he's got a part in that.
He's
one of the main pirates. No, he dances and acts the fool
and
stuff.
You see the boomerang.
Bam.
And this one. Okay, let's be smart.
I love how they build the
reverse.
I love how they build this main bad guy's character. Ooh. And notice how they're even storytelling on him. Like,
weapons, he's not frisbees.
We've already established that he's a vicious dude and will kill you at any moment's notice. And he's crazy. But now this puts him over the edge. And it's like, and we see how insane he can be.
You kill my lover.
But the feral kid knows how to he knows how to work it.
Well, and that's what I also like about the mythology of Mad Max is, like, these kids that grow up in this time, it's like, this is all they know.
Yes, the fingers go.
And they laugh.
We shouldn't try to catch it. What an idiot.
That's right.
It is so entertaining. From those last two shots, look at the overcast sky to the clear blue sky. From shot to shot.
Yeah.
People aren't watching that because they're watching the action. But if you look in the background, it's very entertaining.
Started out with just
I'm choosing to ignore it, yeah. This guy is so great.
Well, if you want to see him,
he doesn't have. He has like one line in the film, right? This guy.
Where you going? But he's also in Commando, and you want to see Cheese Ball on top of Cheese Ball. Watch Commando with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Wow.
And he's the guy that's his main bad guy in that. Where at the end, he sticks a pipe through him and says, "Let off him steam, Bennett."
Hey, it's Darth Vader.
Look at, they're like, it's throbbing his head's pulsating.
Oh, yeah,
throbbing
disgusting.
Thing.
It's awesome.
Prosthetic action.
It looks just like the back of Darth Vader's head. It does.
It's Anakin.
And wait, isn't this before? It is.
No, this is after Empire.
Yeah.
What? 81?
Empire was 80.
80 was Empire.
Okay. I will defer.
Oh, man.
I will
that
back
famous
off.
Shot where we saw the mask come down. We're like, oh, that's Darth Vader's
I love all this stuff. They shot it late in the afternoon. That looks good.
There's your clear blue sky again.
Yep.
But I do like that they show that he's a very compassionate leader, as rough and tumble as he obviously is and has to be, that's how he establishes order, not just physically, but, hey, we all have the ones we love, and it gives life to these bad guys.
Well,
it's
clear why he's successful as well as a leader.
So I'm wondering if the Swedish guy, you said he was in Commando, right? The bodybuilder?
No, the bodybuilder was in the pirate movie.
Oh, the pirate movie. Could he act?
He had very little lines. He was
because
like one of the
if this guy
pirates.
Can't act, you throw a mask on him and you dub his voice.
Right.
And, you know, I'm wondering if that's the case.
Oh,
I doubt they said, you know what? Let's put a mask on him and make him all. They probably just picked him for his body.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But the mask is awesome.
Yeah, it works.
I mean, a villain with a mask.
This guy walking around, hey, is anybody going to give me a ride? I have no
fingers. I lost my
fingers,
Can someone give me a hand?
Fingers, yeah.
But they take their dead.
And that Ford F-150 with a back cut out with all the weaponry on it, that's great.
And now they're all just taken off. Look at that.
I just love the scenes when they have like massive vehicles moving at the same time across the desert.
That was the parking lot after I saw this movie. And everyone's screaming around. I'm serious, man.
I'm so sad I missed an experience like that.
I can imagine, yeah.
2:30 in the morning.
It's roles Paul Bettany should be playing as that guy.
Yeah.
So let's talk briefly about this. So they're remaking. No, they're making a fourth, which is... And Tom Hardy is playing
Tom
Matt,
Hardy,
Max.
Which will be a perfect
Tom
fit.
Hardy rocks.
I'm really excited. I mean, I think because of the mythology, they can do almost anything they want with a fourth movie, and I'm just excited to see what they come up with.
Right.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not lame.
Is George Miller involved?
Oh, yeah. He's directing. I've already seen footage. Good. I've already seen pictures of, like, they already have their new hero car. And
oh, wow.
So a bunch of stuff you can find on the internet.
Oh, I'll finally get my chance.
Yeah.
I'll be able to go and see that in the movie theater and then drive out of the parking lot like a crazy person.
There you go.
Oh, finally.
I love this
LA is, like, redundant anyway. I mean, it's just more the same, right?
But you don't
to
move.
Drive like that.
I'll have to go home to Michigan to watch it. So I can drive on dirt roads.
Yeah, crazy gridlock just ain't the same.
No. I mean, it reminds you that you're not in the post-apocalyptic world. There's too many people.
A lot of perks in the post-apocalyptic world. Parking spaces. open roads.
I like how the haircuts.
I like how the Pharaoh Kid is just like, hey, I get you.
Again, all done without dialogue.
Nope. Because Max doesn't really talk.
Well, they've got all this other stuff going off on stage. Going on off stage, and this whole other story going on, and they're building this at the same time. And look how full. Once again, to reiterate what I said, look how full all the images are. Throughout this film.
Gosh, that kid's probably never seen a music box. You know, that's like magic to him. Mm-hmm. That's amazing, and I think that little actor totally captures that.
It's nice because it's like. Are there still beautiful things left in the world? Oh, my goodness, I didn't know that.
Exactly.
You know.
And I think
I wish I could show you guys a picture of the guy
Monkey
I went
Boy.
To school with.
But actually, I think, this is part of it. The sense of humor that's on display in this film is unique, and I think that's what actually really helps to make it. I mean, it's just like when we did Raiders. Raiders has its own... sense of humor, which really helped pull it off.
I completely agree. I said the tongue-in-cheek stuff, absolutely.
It endeared
the film to me. On top of everything else, it endeared the film to me.
And it was measured in a way that still balanced out with the other action.
Yes, it wasn't blatant.
I love the storyline here, too, where they're kind of falling apart at the seams inside, and this guy is just grasping on everything he can just to hold everybody together.
Yeah.
And somehow they're going to be able to do it. And it shows what kind of a good leader he is, but also what a predicament he's in, which makes you realize that when Max offers up this deal to them, that they kind of have to take it. They're like, you know, that's what do we else to lose? I love this.
Yep, there you go. And this is where the movie changes.
Push in, Dean.
Yep.
And that's really our first big line from him, isn't it?
That's right.
He had two on the mountaintop and then those right there.
I love this teepee.
Nice lighting. Look at that light on Mel Gibson right there. Yep. That is beautiful with the background. That's a great shot.
And it's not villain lighting, you know what I mean? It's not like the light is coming from above his head. It's coming from kind of just down in front.
That's like Shakespeare. I mean, that's like a...
Well, yeah, that's very, very Hamlet reminiscent.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he did Hamlet, but I'm just saying, though.
But not too well.
No.
Well, I mean, I think that's actually kind of unique lighting. I've never really seen. I mean, that's quite a specific choice to not light basically from his neck down.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He's got a little snoot right on his face.
Yeah, basically.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So much information with so little being said. I love it.
Yeah.
And this film moves like a bat out of hell, too. It's great.
And right here,
it's like 93
scenes,
minutes. It's
boy, they don't have any problem showing you night once he gets outside of this compound.
I know there's a lot of grain, a lot of the film stock they're using, a lot of these night shots. They had to really push it.
He's the Tin Man. They're oiling him up.
Got to oil his leg. oh, okay.
God, could you imagine?
I just think that that's ingenious, though. You know, his leg's a little busted, but he has to be this rough and tumble guy. What are you going to do? You're just going to give him some sort of, I don't even know.
But that's what I love about the film, too. His leg brace, this or that. Everyone's idiosyncrasies in their set, in their dressing and costumes. Necessity is the mother of invention.
Mm-hmm. And they're
you have
unique.
To survive, and their fortress, the way they use the bus is their, you know, gate, blah, blah, blah. All the, you have to survive, so use what you have at the ready in order to, and necessity being the mother of invention, modify it so it can help you. Mm-hmm. And I love that invention throughout this movie. Yeah. There's lots of little inventive things.
There's this great show. I think it's on Discovery, and it's called The Colony, and it's in its second season now. And it's reality-based, but basically what they do is they put these people with different different skills into a post-apocalyptic situation mm-hmm. and see what they do. And a lot of it is that. It's like this organic, like they're inventing new things. They're trying to get power. They're trying to figure out how to clean water. And
little MacGyver-esque type
right,
things.
Right, right. Yeah. But, I mean, they do develop in a very similar way mm-hmm. to the way people are in this film, you know, which lends a lot to the authenticity of this.
We'll go back to your tribal instincts.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But so no longer does that diamond have any value.
Right.
I mean, not unless it's cutting glass.
Yeah, this sequence is the grainiest in the film.
Well, that's the thing, is it was so underlit that mm-hmm. you couldn't even see this little boy off to the side. Whenever I was a kid seeing this, I never saw this until I saw it in HD. I'm like, holy crap, he was 20 feet away. When you saw it growing up, I'm like, okay.
Right. Very murky.
And sequence. Plus, it was in 4:3. So.
Well, actually, yeah, you would have lost it. They would have cropped it out.
You never saw him.
Never saw it.
Oh, God, that kid's so cute.
And he's like, over here.
Yeah, they had to pump up the ISO on this one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Had to push it.
Yeah, this is a scene you definitely want to see projected. There's only so much you can do.
Well, here's it shows the, man, how heavy would that be to carry that across? Okay, for every gallon of water, it's about 8 pounds. And he's carrying, what, 4 5-gallon drums. So is he carrying like 160 pounds across his back, across the desert? And how far did he drive to get there?
Right.
Whew.
Yeah, look how rough that is.
Oh, yeah.
And they have it on a dissolve. That's why it's even more.
Yeah.
But that was the most most challenging sequence in the remaster to the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Nice music.
I think those gallon tanks look pretty damn empty. Look at the way they're shaking.
Well, they're probably on. No. They would shake like that, sure. Ooh, could you imagine? That'd be so heavy.
It just looks a little light to me. I guess I never noticed. It doesn't really look as heavy as like.
Well, if it were going back and forth that much, that quickly, it would actually throw him off balance a little bit. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't be that steady.
Right.
I like the music. And the thing about the music is it was so different than what the music we'd, you know, heard in essentially contemporary American cinema at the time.
I love how we go
different
back
in what
to
way? What are you hearing?
Just how the music.
To show that,
like, poor guy. Just in terms
and
of how the music underscored was used. Brian May used the music to underscore the action in the film, and which we really hadn't seen. Oh God, this guy is just like my luck is not holding up.
And it's a great story arc. And once again, see the interconnection between him and that dog. He just looks at the dog. And by the way, the dog's name is Dog.
Dog. Oh, great.
And here we are back to that scene.
Yeah.
Make him carry it.
And see, here's great storytelling between just the dog and this dude. The dog dislikes him. He dislikes the dog. But yet there's a little bit of comedy between the two of them. Like the dog's goofing around with him and hearing him, and he tries to take the snake from him. It's just great storytelling.
I'm watching. There's someone off camera, off left, getting all that dust kicked up to make that enter the screen.
Oh.
That answers your question on how heavy he was carrying that. Yeah, you're right.
What did? There's a snake trap. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a snake.
My snake.
Now this is a good time to point out that that helicopter or that it's a single manned copter. It can't carry anyone. So later in the movie, you know, George Miller even talks about like whenever they were making the movie that. You know, they just had to cheat a little bit because it was just such a cool vehicle to have this little...
It is an awesome vehicle.
Gyrocopter.
Right.
It's nice that they incorporated something from the air. And yeah. So you had all this coverage from the land, but then sure. they got to play with
Well, and it
POV
was such a great tool for him to get all these aerial photographs of all this stuff going on. It
expands the environment so much better.
We see his gun for the first time.
Look at that.
Really? And he's got one shell now.
Yeah, all this time. But are you going to risk it? I mean, are you going to risk it if someone's holding a gun to your face?
I
don't think so.
I love Mel Gibson's answer to him right. when he asks if it's a dud. Right. It's perfect. What a great answer.
Heidi, I think it's cool that you like this film because to me, this has always been such an adrenaline guy film. And I don't think too many women warm up to Mad Max Road Warrior. What? Am I wrong about that?
I think women have been like closeted action horror film fans for like a really long time. I mean, now... You know, like a lot of polls I'm seeing is like women go see more horror movies than men. Women watch more sci-fi than men. And that's, you know, they're kind of like the strongest, most loyal fans of those genres right now. And I think that was probably always true, but it just wasn't, I guess, socially acceptable. I know that sounds strange. But
I don't mean to be prejudiced or to generalize or anything, but... I think it's really cool when a woman's like, I love Road Warrior.
Mom loves action films.
That's great.
Loves them. Yep.
Was this type action film, though?
I've never
asked gore factor, the intensity? Well,
I don't think my mom likes gore, but she loves action. Yeah. She loves like Arnold Schwarzenegger action films. Loves them.
No, I love them, too.
That's great.
But, you know, and also, those are just observations and things that I've read. I mean, this could all just come from the fact that I used to watch these kind of movies with my dad all the time, you know?
Well, why wouldn't a woman like to look at Mel Gibson on
right,
screen
totally
at this
hot.
Time or Clint Eastwood
right,
or whoever?
Exactly.
I mean, they walk on the screen,
well,
they own it.
Man.
And they're so alpha male. Yeah, you get these little... That's why Tom Hardy's a great character.
Right.
Casting for the new one is he's not some, you know, amazing looking great. I mean, he's good looking, but he's still an
rough
alpha male, rough and tumble guy. And
I think
really
that's what women want. I think women do want a cowboy. I think that there's... So I think that maybe that's part of the draw, like a real, like, testosterone-driven man.
And I never understood why, like, it seems nowadays whenever men become successful in Matthew McConaughey, I really look at him totally out of his league in these romantic comedies and everything else. Not that he's not good, but I think that's why they're not more successful, or his career hasn't gone the way of like a Mel Gibson or something like that, because immediately they go into it and they're doing the same thing with Gerard Butler as soon as he does 300 and he really establishes himself as an alpha male guy. All of a sudden he's doing these pussy
but
little
you know
romantic
why they
comedies
do that
you know
is because they're alpha males and they're like, women are going to want to go watch
yeah,
a movie
but,
with him in it where he like buys flowers for a woman.
Yeah,
whoa.
But the movies but the movies are atrocious.
Yeah, of course,
but they're not for us.
But
that's
they,
well
that's
us guys. Yeah, they,
but,
do, they do have an
hey
yeah, exactly.
But even when my wife watches what's the one with Jennifer Aniston and Gerard, and it's all of a sudden she's like, yeah, this is a piece of shit.
Yeah,
you know, it's
that.
Like, well, they're horrible. They're unwatchable. That's my point. It's like anyway.
But are there any of those kind of movies that are watchable?
Sure.
I'm not saying that there aren't, but that's the thing. Maybe it's just those movies happen to be bad.
Great
and
shot.
To be in them.
I don't know.
That was,
yeah,
that
I,
was good.
There's
yeah.
good rom-coms.
I've always loved this shot right here.
This is a great shot.
It's amazing. Every time I enter a freeway, I think of this shot. entrance on a freeway. I'm like, I can get up there.
It's just so kinetic. I mean, you know. Nice.
There's that tool we talked about. Well, one thing that people don't know is a lot of these shots that look like they're going 150 miles an hour, they are actually only going about 30, 40 miles an hour. But by having the camera so low and right there, you feel the speed of the ground coming past you. You don't have to go, you know, so people always wonder, like, why weren't there more accidents on the set?
Right.
Well, they aren't as going as they aren't going
but
as
still,
fast. As you
would
imagine.
There are stunts in this film to this
day.
Oh,
they are ridiculous.
But I cannot fathom being safe.
You're correct.
But there's also some overcranking going on.
Yeah,
there's
undercranking to make it go faster.
You're right. Sorry, you're right. Undercranking. Yeah. I was thinking slow motion for some reason. In Mad Max, there's much more of the undercranking. Much more.
Yeah, here in a second.
And I love how they didn't clean his windshield.
Yeah.
It's dirty as anything.
Right. Well, it should be.
Exactly.
That's a nice. That's a nice.
But
gun.
You know, there are a lot of stars that would say, "I want you to clean it, so I can be seen better through the windshield."
Yeah, that's true.
And wouldn't you know, Humongous would have the biggest humongous gun.
But of course, because he's the boss.
He's the humongous. It's a phallic symbol. A four.
Oh.
Well, we realized
it did
that
suck.
Didn't work. The 44 with the sight on it. It's only Australians. It's awesome.
Oh, we got the radiator. And I'm trying to remember what happens.
It's great. Ooh, why not?
That's what happens.
Okay, there you go.
Why not?
Your radiator takes
the bullet. She's making her rounds.
So everyone's dying, screaming, all the sound of gore and warfare, and these two people are having sex.
Yeah.
Again, but going back to, like, you know, primal needs, distraction.
You know, they're just hanging out. It's like, okay, fine. Something's going on. Oh, look at that. It's a great shot.
The days before Steadicam.
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, see, here's the thing is they were probably doing this out of necessity. They couldn't control the camera, whereas nowadays they do it on purpose.
Right.
Right.
And overuse it. Sad.
But notice how steady everything else is. You know, you have a little bit of...
Yeah, I just love it.
Yes. Everything's a weapon.
Yeah,
even the snake.
Everything is a weapon.
I love this guy. Oh, this is under crank.
Under.
Yeah, look at that.
Now he's out of control, which leads to this next sequence.
Awesome. Oh, they wrecked the 69 Charger.
The dummy on top of that. Ooh. The dummy had no spine. Did you see that? His whole head and everything is snapping back.
This is a great action piece right here. I love this guy with a pink beard.
Yeah. To match his car.
Oh, there you go. No mercy.
So good. 57 Chevy down the road. I love how they show how efficient this guy is. I don't even know his name. I don't even know. I think his...
this guy is awesome.
I think his name is Wes in the movie.
I mean, he's forever famous because of this movie.
I think it's the assless chaps, really.
Yeah.
I think that's where he gets his power source from.
There we go.
He's solar powered.
Yeah.
And he has extra, I see.
He's
panels.
So good.
Yeah.
See, if he covered him up, it would be, you know.
This is a great, I love this as a kid. It made me want to learn how to do gymnastics. I love how the wind's blowing his feathers over his.
Yeah.
Boom. Great edit with the flash.
The flash, yeah.
Great edit with the flash. Ah, and he's just crazy. It really makes you realize why certain actors just die for good baddie parts.
Uh-huh.
You know, like they just, because you can just chew up the scenery and nothing's out of bounds. Just go for it.
String.
Oh, did you see the
high
wire?
Def.
Yeah.
We saw the wire.
Oh.
Yeah, high def is all
right.
Do that.
You know, hey, in VHS, I never saw it.
It doesn't ruin it for me.
Come on, Max, get him.
I see how he does that and then keeps on his mission. Great.
I'm just thinking of shooting all this stuff. I mean, on location. Man.
I've always loved that driving. Dun, 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 dun,
that's
dun,
Brian
dun, dun,
May's the downbeat thing. That's what I'm saying. The whole last 10 minutes of this movie, that's all it is.
It just shows really the athleticism of Gibson, too, at this time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just how he just moves around. And... See, you thought he was chasing him, but he's like, nope, I got to get over here to protect this.
Right, because the others will take care of.
This is a great hero shot right there,
Mr. Mohawk.
Or music, actually, it's not the downbeat. What's the? What do you call it when it's after the downbeat? Is the downbeat the beginning of the beat, and then
nice.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the way the kid looked up at that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great cuts.
Yeah, those chaps are bad.
There they go.
They're badass.
Was that? I'll have to go back and look. Was
badass.
That a lift from when they left earlier? Like, did they just put in
the
that
lighting?
Cut,
totally didn't match
that cut from earlier when they when
the
it really was civil and they showed Mel Gibson looking at the.
And
left.
Now we have overcast.
Look.
It's you know the weather changes. It's subtropical
within a quarter of a second.
Subtropical.
Man, I really did forget how much I love this kid. I don't know why. I guess when I think of this movie, it's not he's not like the first character that really pops into my mind.
Actually, he is for me.
Look how he snorts it. Kid.
You don't mess with that
he's
kid.
A badger.
Look at his hair, man. That's some wig.
He's got such bad teeth.
If you think of the chronology of this movie, whenever it came out, and if the apocalypse had happened at the time, that old guy would have been in the Australian Army that actually was in World War II and other major battles that Australia had at that time. So he would really have all those. Well, and they were in Japan as well, so they were part of the Pacific campaigns. They were at some of those islands before we were. Mm-hmm. So it would totally make sense. I've always loved this.
I
He's got such a high voice.
What the heck?
Well, you don't have a walkie-talkie.
What I love is that
when you don't have a walkie-talkie,
we need a translator
or a cell phone
after the blonde guy.
Yeah, that's right.
Or a megaphone.
I'm going to scare you guys.
Or a can with a string.
Me and my two brothers, or the three of us.
You used to do that bit?
We could do that whole bit between the three of us.
That's
one of us would change off. We'd be the translator, and then the next one would be the guy giving the dialogue, and then the next guy would be repeating it.
What's funny to me is we need a translator after the translator because I can't understand him through the accent.
24 hours? That's great. But we would change it up so each other could play it, but that's how.
Nice Foley, the squeak of his leg.
Mm-hmm. I like it. This is the lull before the storm.
Oh, yeah, what a storm.
Yeah.
I love the third act of this movie.
Yeah.
Non-stop action.
It's just like, you know, we think you're a hero. It's like, I'm not a hero.
Well, we don't need another one.
But I'm leaving.
Okay, his shock of... Oh, there's a shock of white hair.
Yeah.
It changed a little bit.
I think part of his hair just kind of moved over it.
I think maybe.
Yeah, this
That's
is where...
Nice light.
She's great. She reminds
she
me of...
Good presence.
Look at that.
Oh, there's another actress who did...
Burn him.
Yeah, you know how I'm thinking of. Yeah.
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 His dinky dog again.
What film are you thinking?
Her name starts with an A. She's like an action star. She's done some films, and she had a TV series that only lasted one season.
I don't know. I know she was a model in Australia.
Yeah, there's another actress we're thinking of.
Yeah. She looks similar, too.
Her name starts with an A.
Okay, now this is our third act right here.
She's kind of got a Jacqueline Bisset look to her.
We faded out, and now we're into third act.
Now we know that they've gone crazy. They're crucifying the guys, burning them.
Yeah.
And... You've pissed off Humongous.
Stop the madness.
Are you thinking of Adrienne Barbeau? Is that her name?
No.
She kind of reminds me of Jacqueline Bisset.
Yeah. Her face. Bit. Yeah. She has a slightly long face.
It's a name like Ashley something. Not Ashley. It's so close.
Those orchestra strikes there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the.
It's on the downbeat.
That is the downbeat then.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That's what I always took away from this film was the excessive use of downbeat strikes. That is the Road Warrior sound.
But it works. I like
it. I'm not saying it didn't. That's what I like about it.
It's Brad Pitt welding.
Back in his early days.
Yeah.
He took a side trip to Australia.
The
outback.
The guy welding looked like Brad Pitt whenever he had the full beard and all
like
crazy.
Legends of the Fall.
Yeah. The ants are scurrying around, getting everything
and
done.
And what I like is that there's an orchestra involved. It isn't synthesizer. They could have done something like that,
especially
in the 80s.
With low budget.
Right.
So, yeah, especially with low budget in the 80s. So I'm very glad they went to that sound.
Right.
It's excellent.
This girl reminds me of Bam Bam. Or Pebbles.
Yeah.
Very cute.
Yeah.
He's like, come on, we gotta go. And she doesn't know whether she wants to go.
But my tribe.
It shows how people lose faith within their own little tribe to have any way of escaping... To be free of what they think is holding them back.
Right.
Of what they know.
Yeah.
Well, it's trading the unknown for the known.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, cognitive dissonance. She can't imagine what her life is without it. Yeah.
The family. And that show, The Colony, it's really great. You guys should watch it. But part of the experiment, what they do is they remove someone from the group at some point during the experiment and to see how they react to it. And it's just always the hardest part of the two seasons I've watched is when someone gets removed from the group. Like they don't know what happens to them. They just go missing. And, you know, these people are together for such a short amount of time, but because of like the heightened circumstances, they form these really intense bonds and that is where they get a lot of their humanity from.
Sure.
You know,
Or they also didn't realize the value of that person until now they're gone probably.
I think that there's a combination of that as well, yeah.
one of the few dialogue scenes.
Well, here's the interesting is we don't realize when you first watch this film why he wants him really to drive it is because it's all just a bait and switch.
Right.
Right. So, I love that. That was good surprise. Yeah. I had no idea that was the case. Oh,
yeah, totally. When I saw this. Totally didn't see that.
He didn't want to drive the tanker because he wants to be with. He wants to lead this tribe into.
Look at his neck. Is that? Did we see an injury that would have caused the?
No, I was just thinking about the neck
on
thing,
his neck.
But I didn't say anything because I thought maybe I was just.
Or is that something that happened out on location? That
well, with Mel Gibson,
it looks
was
like
you know
rope.
That.
I didn't notice it. Burned. Did notice it before, but I'm
maybe
sure
there was
be something.
A scene they cut. I don't
maybe.
Know.
Because that's pretty prominent. They would have tried to hide. Well, I don't know. In this film, you wouldn't hide it.
But it's not as obvious like in Inglourious Basterds, where clearly you can see, you know, on Aldo Raine's neck that he's been lynched, or you know, definitely they tried to hang him, and it didn't work.
Well, it makes sense. Everyone should have marks like this in this movie because everyone's getting banged up, and whether we see it or not doesn't matter because we know that that's the way of life out in this film.
Right.
But that's pretty prominent.
That's the obligatory punch.
No, I will not listen to you, says Mad Max.
That's right. With his fist. And then it looks guilty.
Well, once again,
hitting him.
A great story concept of he doesn't want to be attached to anybody because he lost so much in the beginning.
Right.
But
right.
yet you don't have to know that. You only by his actions you know that. So
right.
you
yeah,
don't have
course.
To see Mad Max Part 1 where he gets his wife and kids get killed.
And may I say, when I was watching this, at no time did I say to myself, the first time in 1981, oh, I wish I'd seen Mad Max. I'm so lost. I never said that in this movie. It's its own thing, you know?
Right. You don't need to know his backstory to know his backstory.
Well, it shows he is the true anti-hero in the sense that as strong as he is, he's also that makes him weak because he can't be around other people. People might look at that as a strength, but actually it's a weakness.
Well, it's the superhero thing too, right? Yeah, you know, you can't connect to people around you or else they die.
Yeah.
I think this is the biggest scene in an interior in the entire film.
It's the longest sustained quiet scene we have. I like how he's sitting in the door.
It's just ridiculous. His little mouth.
And it's happy birthday. They had to pay for that.
Yes, mightily.
Of all tunes, they picked that one.
But it's something you know that everybody would know. I think that's why. And it doesn't really have any sort of like religious connotation or any sort of, you know, nationality to it.
Well, and there's a good story point to bring up here.
It's your youth. Sorry to cut you off, Curtis. But happy birthday. It reminds you of innocence.
Your youth.
Well, I mean that.
And looking forward to something.
Sure. But that goes into what I was going to say, which is the innocence of this little boy who's looking for a father figure. Mm-hmm. And Mel Gibson, who lost his child and wife, is more deterred to stay there because he does have a connection with that boy and the boy has a connection with him. So the two of them are, you know, need each other, but
it's the Newt Ripley syndrome.
Sure.
And
then later, whenever the kid's on the truck, it's going to give him a purpose, which is to not only survive, but to also survive for this child.
That guy's a good actor.
He's great.
Yeah.
What else has he been in? Do we know who he is? I don't know.
I have no idea. I actually don't think I've ever seen him again.
I'd be in his community.
I'm sure he's been in tons of Australian
stuff.
He has
nice presence, very natural.
Well, I like that they didn't, you know. Well, I think one of the greater things about this when first watching it, I mean, even to this day, Mel Gibson's pretty much the only famous guy in it that we can draw from that's even come out of it, at least in American films.
It's not distracting to where you're taken out of the story because everyone's famous.
That's Tom Selleck or that's Tom Cruise or that's, you know, I mean, it's like you're able to watch the movie for what it is, which
says a lot.
I mean, Bruce Spence, big star, really takes me out of it.
But I mean, there's a lot to be said for that rather than stunt casting and having nothing but famous people that take you out of the very story you're trying to tell.
it is, I mean, we've talked about this before. It is one of the things that bumps me about modern day filmmaking is that there's so much stunt casting, even down to the bit players. And Quentin Tarantino had that argument whenever he hired Robert Forster for Jackie Brown.
Mm-hmm.
People were like, oh, wow, where'd you find him? He's like, what do you mean where'd I find him? I mean, I called him up and but nobody was using him. But mm-hmm. people forget that he was a great actor, is a great actor,
right.
And he'd done tons of work. But yet Hollywood will discard you and for the new hot thing and just keep the, yeah, anyway.
Well, because it's not about there. Making good material. It's about making money.
Yeah.
Undercrank.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
But they have this idea that they need the star to sell the picture and
right.
or and in every way. So it's yep. like you see the third cop on the left. Well, that guy's been in 18 other movies as the third cop on the left. So it's like after a while it loses its value. So now yeah. you're like, huh.
Wow.
That went from no light to lots of light in a hurry.
Oh, here in a second, we're going to go back to a morning scene again that doesn't match up.
But I love like the extreme morning scenes of this film. I don't know. I just find that to be like the best time.
There you go.
Every guy I knew at this time wanted to hook up a nitrous oxide setup to their car after this movie.
Well, it's a
look
great
red
tool
wow.
to show
so beautiful
yeah.
to show action again. Whereas the way that George Miller always cuts back to that blower turning on and then just getting that extra little burst of speed,
right?
It's like hyperspace for
yeah, most definitely.
Post-apocalyptic world.
Oh, this is unhappy. Not my favorite scene.
Yeah, no.
And everyone's like, oh, at least the dog's okay.
Come
okay,
on, if you have an animal in the movie, that. You got to kill it.
Yeah. Like, I can see this coming.
Come on, yeah,
way.
This was no-brainer.
Yeah.
That's a great shot, by the way.
It's the easiest way to make someone feel sad and someone cry.
Yeah. Notice it's the classic anti-hero setup. If you ever go back and watch any of the old Clint Eastwood spaghetti westerns in the fistful of dollars, he gets the crap beat out of him and he has to find his way before, you know, go into the cave and kind of reemerge. It's almost like the rebirth
right.
of Christ. He's now going through hell.
Right. I, and in a way, I guess this is,
oh gosh.
Oh yeah.
I
was going to say second
act.
But it's his protector.
But it's great. The way, I mean, in the way they shot it, the way they have push in on him and they never show it.
Yeah.
Which is the only way to do it.
I like how this guy has all these car emblems on his jacket right here.
Oh, there we go. Oh, man, he is beat up. He does beat up really well.
He does.
He always has.
Yeah.
He did it probably the best in Braveheart.
Well, every movie, he is the martyr in every movie.
See ya.
So basically, Mel Gibson was the Chuck Heston of his era.
Yeah.
Always being the
And they
martyr.
Both have some weird, like...
That's a great shot.
I don't know, like crazy legacy, actually, of people questioning their... I don't know. There's some Heston haters out there. I'm not going to lie.
I liked him as an actor. His politics, I never paid attention to. It was just like, you know, I liked him as an actor, and that's important enough for me.
Right, but I think like the same kind of people that are Heston haters are actually probably Mel Gibson haters as well. There's probably a lot of crossover there.
Well, Mel Gibson, unfortunately, got caught saying things that
well,
got
that's
repeated
in
public.
Life,
exactly, it's private life, and it's like,
as
it's
an
different.
Actor,
as an actor, he's superb.
He's unmatched in that character.
Yeah.
I know for such a huge long period of time, I mean, Mel Gibson was the reigning male.
He was untouchable.
Absolutely. Film presence.
Yeah. He was it.
Up through the 90s, yeah.
Yep.
Definitely 80s and 90s.
Yep.
I mean,
I've
was
seen everything he's ever been in.
I was of that era when he emerged.
Wait,
he
did you see Mrs.
Came
Soulful?
The biggest and held on
Mrs.
to it.
What?
Mrs. Soulful?
No. Okay. I haven't seen everything.
That was early.
And
wait,
what's the Peter Weir film he was in that was so great? Gallipoli?
Oh, he was in Year of Living Dangerously, which is
Tim.
My favorite Peter Weir.
Actually,
he was in Tim. That was
his
earliest.
He's actually very, very good
that's
in that.
That's right.
Plays a autistic man.
Oh, that's right.
And,
I didn't know about that.
But, I mean, you go from this to, you know, Beyond Thunderdome. Then, of course, the Lethal Weapons came out. And then, you know, Tequila Sunrise. He's fantastic in that.
Which I've never seen.
You know, and then, you know, so... It's a very good film.
Tequila
Sunrise.
That was,
very
that was
well,
him and Kurt Russell?
Very
well one?
Lit film. Yeah, Kurt Russell, Michelle Pfeiffer, Mel yeah. Gibson.
I've never seen There's it. An Apocalypse That's a great now. Shot. Great shot.
By the way, just so you know, that George Miller, when he explains this, is yeah. Mel Gibson hung himself out the side of like a Huey helicopter, you know, like a Vietnam-style helicopter, and just wow. hung himself out there to get that shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, just had people hanging onto his legs.
Oh, he's a committed actor.
He's Gibson, baby.
Yeah. He knew what it took.
But isn't this so Christ-like that he's now he's flying over
he's
the
flying
land
over
and he's
yeah.
and he's crossing over and then he's going to emerge out of this tent here in a minute.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, very good.
So George Miller's not a bad storyteller.
No,
he's very
at all.
Good.
Not at all. So in a way, this is the end of the second act.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love it whenever he wakes up and he sees that guy's head's collapsed that Wes headbutted.
Oh.
And he sits up.
With the Flash?
Yeah, with that guy. Comes in the show, his skull's caved in.
Mm, yeah.
The herpes guy.
Aw, herpes. They put me with this guy? Really? Looks like an old, what's the name of those? Airstream.
Yeah, trailer.
Cut out.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or a little bit like those like 50s era bomb shelters, but not obviously underground.
We need you, Max.
That dude, what happened to his nose? He's had that the whole movie. It's interesting that he has his shotgun and he's doing his little thing. And then
it would have been cool for all the background to say, go off, make your own history, make your own character.
Hmm.
You know, do your own idiosyncrasy, make yourself look like you have a past. And you see each one's little invention that they made for their character, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I would love to, if I were doing background, I'd love to do a film yeah. where they say, go all out, make your own character.
Well, yeah. I bet this movie was a blast to work on.
I mean,
it's the kind of movie where you want to hang out of the helicopter. You know, it's...
Yeah, according to the stories I heard, that they had some good drinking nights.
I bet.
On
Australians.
I bet.
During the filming of this one.
Now I'm just what
the makeup.
Does he know? He doesn't. He doesn't know. Max doesn't know.
No, he doesn't know.
He never knows the secret until it's revealed to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
They never tell him.
They always keep him in the dark.
Yeah.
To survive.
Bullets like gold.
Yeah.
Wipe.
Yep.
And this is a great. Set up here to show the Wes on the hood of the car, chained up like a dog, and they aren't quite ready to release him. He's still in punishment whenever when Humongous drives up and the guy's on the front.
Do we know his name is Wes?
I think it is.
I mean,
I'm
in
just
the film,
guessing.
Did they say it? Or
Wes is who? That's the bad guy?
The Bane Mohawk guy.
Oh.
The ass chaps?
Yeah.
Yeah, ass chaps. Ass chap man, badass.
I just call him, yeah, badass.
I'm just
chaps.
Going down the character list here, and it's the only one I can come up with that's his name.
Ooh,
I could be totally
I'm sure
wrong.
There was plenty of,
but right here, it's awesome. He's just like
he's got a chain on him,
and we realize how badass Humongous is to be like have this much control over this guy.
How much that shot freaked me out. I'm going, what world am I in?
Yeah.
Who are these people? What movie is this?
Exactly.
Where am I?
But that's
it. Like unsettling. I'm like, what am I watching?
He's grounded, and you know what? If you're a good little boy, I'll let you off your leash.
Yeah.
And then you wonder how did he get him into that submission? Did he beat him into that submission or rape him? I'll just stop.
I'd like to wonder about that. From Curtis, what we've seen
already, I don't think I'm wondering, seeing that I've already seen that. That's why he has the ass chaps.
That I'm sure he does because of. Oh man, never mind.
He's
what I like is all the groundwork has been laid for this huge confrontation. Nothing but apocalyptic confrontation now of things coming together. And the strongest survive. And they did not wimp out. They went for it at the end. Mm-hmm. They said, we're going to give you the biggest payoff you've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's an incredible payoff of the collision of forces that make up this whole sequence.
Oh, nice small talk cocktail. I like that the feral kid, and they tried to get the feral kid onto the bus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he just refused, like, no way. I'm obviously, he doesn't know.
Ooh.
He's a little monkey.
And the carnage begins. The car carnage, so to speak.
Yeah, it is. Carnage.
Well, I wonder if it came out of necessity that they even made all the bad guys faceless in some ways because they were like, oh, we're just going to keep hiring stuntmen or different guys or just like we can't afford it.
You can switch things out a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at all the guys with the motorcycle gear, they all have the masks.
They died like five times.
Yeah, they could just swap them out. Makes it a lot easier. And then you have your few recognizable faces. So you can at least have the faces. It'd be just recycle the costume with another stuntman.
Magic hour shot there.
Nice. That's.
And then we have no shadows here.
Yep. So it got a little overcast. Okay.
Those clouds move fast.
Or they move fast.
It's subtropical. See? The clouds moved out. I never noticed that before, and I'll never notice it again.
In this film, you don't because of what's taking place action-wise.
Right.
But if you take your eyes off where you're supposed to look and look at the surrounding edges, you'll be very entertained.
With good editing, you see that's even later, that with good editing and cutting on, whenever you cut on action will cover you a lot of the time.
Well, and plus, you know, like we were talking about earlier about like there just not being a lot of negative space in the shots. There's not a lot of, there's so much to focus on. Before you even look at the sky.
Mm-hmm. That's some nice explosions, man. They fill it. That was nice.
Yeah, watch here in a second. You see how far this thing really blows up. Like, you see a piece flying toward camera right here.
Yeah.
And, right there, look at that.
Yep. Ooh.
Look at that. Nancy. That's some shrapnel coming right at us.
It's beautiful.
And that's a real explosion.
as far as explosions
look at
go,
the
yeah.
Pretty explosion.
Look at all the tires.
Those tires weigh about 300 pounds a piece. Like and they're. They're huge.
Someone had fun wiring that up. Look at this shot. Oh, this is the Road Warrior shot right here.
Last day of filming for them to explode.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh wait, we need that set again. Oh, sorry.
No, it was Blofeld's Hideaway volcano explosion from a Bond film. You can't use that set ever again.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a nice.
And they go right in on her.
Okay. And that's great control. That's coming in with a helicopter and everything. Yeah. Well, no, you know what? That wasn't. That was a truck with a crane on the front, and everyone just moved out of the way.
I need to see that again to see how high that shot was.
Yeah, the fact that they came in like that. Yeah, they did it like that. But I
love how it's just this one road, you know, just out in the middle of nowhere, just the road. And I love that it's not littered with any kind of cars, because you see that a lot in like post-apocalyptic films nowadays, especially, you know, ones that take place in America or Europe. You know, there's so many, there's all these cars on the road, you know, that people had to abandon.
Set him free.
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be fun if you're driving in Australia one day and they have a plaque up saying this is the Mad Max Road Warrior Road?
Oh, man.
And then you just gun it. You just pedal to the metal.
Give me a machete and we'll really fast
I think that's why they wouldn't do it. Yeah.
That's probably why.
It's all condos now. It's like, yeah. Well, what I love about the stunt work of this film, you know, on rewatching a billion and a half times, is that not as much as the car work as the stunt work of these guys climbing off and on these cars with no fear.
To me, I watch this and all I see are maniacs.
Yeah.
That they got maniacs to do the most illegal, you know, stuff, to go there and just do these stunts, and they got it all on film.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that's what it looks like.
It's guerrilla filmmaking of just do it, no safety, whatever, just fine, go do it.
Like here
I just had drinks afterwards.
Well, all stunt work.
I'm not saying it's that lackadaisical.
Stunt work is, you know that.
Like this, they are really pulling a truck behind the truck right here. Like this car, they're really pulling this behind there. Look at that.
Yeah, but there's no one in the car.
But what I'm
saying
is...
Well, I'm not saying that, but there is a man in that other piece that's right, pulling while that. While that's pulling.
Oh, yeah.
And there's something unsafe about that.
Oh, very much so. But great stunts. Oh.
Great shot. What I'm saying is it wouldn't be too hard to fathom that they got some real characters in the pubs or whatever, Australian blokes that say, oh, yeah, you want it? I'll do some stunts. I'll do this. That'd be, I feel that.
In Mad Max, the first one, they actually did. The motorcycle gang is a real motorcycle gang, most of them.
There's your gloves on fire.
It's crazy Aussies. You know, it's like Zoe Bell, who I love. You know, and when you watch Death Proof, I mean, she's all of that in the car.
Yeah.
She did all of that.
But she's a stunt woman, and there is definitely safety when they do it.
Yeah.
And you definitely want safety because, A, you don't want anyone to get hurt, and B, you want to be able to do it several times over.
I don't see a safety line on that guy hanging from the truck right now is my point of view. Like, the you look at that and you go, oof, that's crazy.
Some more wires I saw. And when I saw this first time in the theater, this is what upset everyone the most. In the crowd was it her death right here.
It upset me quite a bit too. You know, whenever
that and the dog
and the barbed wire is what did it.
Oh, yeah. Then she's hanging there and she's just like,
and he's still and they're fighting over her and they're ripping her open as she's being dragged back and forth on the barbed wire.
Like, look at that. He's pulling right up next to him. And that's how good of a director George Miller is. Like, right there, he shows you the speed, but when you go back, they're really not moving that fast. Look at the guys in the background.
They're only moving about
15, 20 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But it's so well done, you didn't notice that the first time you see it. Like, look at this truck almost spin out right here.
And this, I mean, at the time and even now, I'd say this is pretty...
They are
fairly.
Near, yeah.
This is fairly unrivaled, except for Thunderdome. But you'd never seen, like, such elaborate car chases as this, ever.
Oh, no.
There's one shot where someone hits something, his body flips over as he's flying towards camera.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming up, and when I see it, I'll...
No, that guy actually, he was supposed to go over the car... And he actually, that was the only accident they had on the set. And it's coming up right here. It was the only accident on set for the whole movie. And he was supposed to fly over the car, but he really did clip his feet. And
it's an incredible visual.
And it broke his legs.
And when you saw the bodies hit the ground that way, that was big stuff.
And Max is like, you asshole, you are dying now.
He just loves that. You think it's the funniest thing in the world.
Yeah. And this is where it gets chewed up underneath the truck, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's amazing. Here it is. Here's the stunt you're talking about right here. But it's a great stunt.
Right here.
Oh, yeah, he was flying off. Ooh. Oh,
look at that.
And then this guy. Four flips in the air.
Yeah. I could not believe my eyes when I saw that.
Yeah, but a great stunt. It paid off.
Yeah.
But how about the fact that they're actually driving underneath this truck and doing all that? Yeah. It's like so unsafe. But
well, everything about this is so intense.
Nice
and
shot.
So much adrenaline because there's pieces of metal and glass flying everywhere. You can't see through the windshield, so it gives you a sense of panic even for the people involved. You know, there's barbed wire and dust and like bright sunlight. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's violent eye candy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But excellently done. And the editing is just incredible.
I was going to say, whoever edited this thing is phenomenal work.
Well, I mean, it was just Miller and his editor, the way they all planned it, the way they shot it. They had to plan it how to do this and all the low angles and staying low on the road and just the constant reminders of everything that's moving fast. This is
the chronology of everything to take all those bits and pieces to put it together in this way.
I never understood what he was doing right there.
He was going to try. Oh, my. He was going to shoot the tire.
Yeah.
It's awesome. By the way, it says it has three editors.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
Michael Balson, David Stiven, and Tim Wilburn.
Great work.
Yeah.
So
it all makes sense. I'm always in the story, in what's happening with all these bits of footage, everything put together the way they did. It's great.
It's very
downbeat.
It's very well cut without being really fast, quick cuts. Mm-hmm. The cuts are like 3-4 seconds to really sit
like
there.
The overcut stuff where you're lost trying to figure out what's happening.
I can see what everybody's doing clearly. I can follow it.
Look how kinetic this thing is.
I can understand this better than Batman Begins.
Look at the light on him. Wow. Uh-oh. Oh, this is my favorite sequence, right? Curtis, the one I was talking
about. Yeah, it's good stuff, man.
Nice shot. Lots of movement.
Oh.
Yeah, well, Gibson dusts some people off here.
Yeah.
We got trouble.
It's right. All he has to do is blink. It's like, okay, I don't love this. He just throws him over.
What does that kid weigh? Like 10 pounds? He's a little thing, a little nothing.
Ooh. Ouchie.
Ooh. I love the kid encouraging him, though.
One.
This was, I think, the most violence. This really was the most violence I'd ever seen up to this point.
I'd say so, yeah.
I never saw anything this violent.
Well, you know, I think this is around the same time as Dawn of the Dead, which also was exceedingly violent for the time. And no one, you know, I'd never seen anything like it. And I think it was right around the same time.
You know, violent in a totally different way.
But it was the gory violence.
Yeah. Oh, no, that is... Oh my gosh!
His heads explode against.
That's
the
great
tanker.
Editing,
but still,
great
but editing. In terms of depiction of gore and violence screen, these were seminal.
Yeah,
you bite him.
That's right.
I'll never forget the energy of the audience I was with by this point of the film. They were just in it.
Oh, but this is great visceral filmmaking. Absolutely. He's like, I'm beating up on you. It's not working, but I'm beating up on you.
Look at Gibson like, oh, that's okay. I'm all right.
He's like, eh.
See, and you don't understand that he's saying we won, but you, even though we've seen the dirt, I don't think I ever picked up on it until later.
When have we seen the dirt?
Yeah, it's coming out right now.
Oh, I haven't. I never noticed it.
But you wouldn't know it for all the activity that's happening around it.
Right, it could be coming from some other source.
Right, because there's dirt all around.
Right,
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the whole vehicle going off like that. That was wow. Look at that. Yeah.
It's about time. Why didn't they do that at the beginning?
Because there we go.
Great
I think
shot.
This is it.
Is that awesome.
Oh, look at that. You got a guy back there.
You have a camera underneath that tanker.
This had to have taken at least like 3 weeks to shoot.
I can't. You're kidding.
It'd be awesome.
More
every
than
day,
that.
You're like, okay, we're getting to the road.
Yes.
It's like waking up 4 a.m. to do this all day.
That's right. Okay.
Awesome.
If it's not raining. Like, yeah.
And now you have the dead body just sitting on the front of Humongous's car.
Oh, man.
That's where he goes.
With a cigar in his mouth.
Oh,
that's
man.
Gotta hurt.
Yeah.
Still be an awesome way to go out.
This is an interesting cut. They just kind of stop right here.
It's the camera. Well,
do they cut it there rather than on the movement?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I kind of like
it. Well, I guess it explains why they get so far behind, and now whenever Humongous starts back up, he comes right at them.
It's their car point of view.
He was putting out the fire.
Nice mounts on the camera.
Look at that. That car almost went over right there. Yeah. Great stunt.
I can see Miller explaining it. Okay, we're going to put the camera underneath the truck.
And we already have those tire tracks in the dirt, so that was like the second or third time they did that.
Yeah.
I love this driving into the sun.
Yeah.
Now everything should be magic hour. You should have long shadows on everything from here on out.
Absolutely.
But I think it jumps around. Because, I mean, how it would take 6 months to shoot this thing. You only have 15 minutes every day at magic hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not magic hour right there. Oh, get the bullet.
This is my favorite sequence.
I like this. It's like, I need the bullet, you have to get it.
This is the Hitchcock shot.
So much so. Yeah, forget about your safety, kid. Go get those bullets so I can not get my shoulder ripped out here.
We drop it down, bring up the sound of the wind, and now we have his heartbeat that comes in.
Yeah, and the music.
There's another starting back up. Oh, he's got the nitrous. Okay.
Hyperdrive.
He's leaving him behind.
Now look, that's where all the noise
that's
drops out.
That's why they had to drop back, just so they could use the nitrous.
Yeah.
No sounds of any cars, no machines, just the wind.
Yeah.
And the heartbeat. And then to that, everyone.
Great, both of them screaming at each other. Wouldn't you? You'd be like, what the shit?
And the things.
I love how they drag it out with the screaming. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then this,
that's a nice undercrank shot.
Look at this.
It's like,
this.
Okay, fine. And
look at this, man.
Oh, just destroyed.
I love that.
There we go.
Awesome. So perfect. Look at the piece of bone.
Yeah,
like,
was that
did they actually like take some like pig leg or a calf leg or something? It's like, we'll put that on the front too. It'll look great whenever it's just demolished.
And I like how these guys just come up and there's just like,
completely out of focus.
That was the money shot.
it's just soft.
Everything led right up to that. All that
and now we
movement.
See. Yeah.
And now we have stillness. That's quite dramatic to go from one extreme to the other.
And that we see that it was always sand. And they're
all
like,
for nothing.
And now they've lost all their leaders, and like, oh, screw this, we're leaving. Ain't no point.
The guy on the gun has a Geordi LaForge visor.
Yeah,
yeah, really.
Which one's the new humongous?
And that's what there's only four of them left.
Yeah, where do they go now? They're like, what do we do?
Well,
that's what you get.
They're gonna go.
Bad guy.
They're gonna
that's
go right. join Tina Turner.
Yes, they are. Thunderdome.
Oh, they got a little hand.
That's where they wind up. Yeah. With the pigs.
That was an interesting choice to show the shotgun in the hand right there. Because now do we think that's Mad Max? And then here, boom.
So he was beat up before. Now what is he?
Yeah. This guy.
Hey, I mean, he's still got all of his limbs. He could be the guy, that other guy that just...
That hangs from the support?
And I think he died, didn't he?
Everyone died.
Yeah.
He's the one that fell off in that really dramatic fashion.
That's right, he got crushed.
Yep.
I like how he just carries him under his arm.
Look, everyone dies in a dramatic fashion.
Look at
in this.
Movie. And now he.
Wouldn't you be so offended if you were the one person who didn't?
I know. You still got like a sore thumb.
What did I do wrong?
Yeah.
You get like influenza, you know, like a bad case.
And now he's. And this. Now he sees. You know, he sees
infected
what it is.
Infected hangnail that leads to something else.
I'd be like, please, can I just pull off a truck?
Not going to cut the mustard at this point.
Yeah. What did I do, George?
And actually, the kid now sees. Yeah, because the kid didn't know before.
Yeah, he didn't.
Yeah. Oh, he's got the ornithopter working. Okay.
It's called like, what's it called?
I think it's called an ornithopter. Or that might just be from Dune. But in Dune, they had like little one-man helicopters.
If Dune says that's what it is, I agree with that.
Thank you, Heidi. It is now an ornithopter. We dub the ornithopter.
Only time he smiles, right?
Yeah.
They got you good. They got you good, Max.
Yeah. Oh, I guess they
prologue.
They hooked up.
Safety.
Very pioneer time, wagon trail.
Yeah. Oh, riding off into the sunset.
Oh, so Ornithopter Man's a new leader. All right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like how they're singing Kumbaya and stuff here.
That's right.
They're like, who cares about Max? Who cares about Max? We used him.
Well, I mean, was always like, that isn't a whole lot of gasoline to be carrying for them to get to
that's
the
reverse.
Land.
That's reverse footage right there.
Oh?
Yeah.
Right.
They actually pushed in on him, and then they reversed it for that shot.
Oh, that's great shot.
And then this is a great light on him.
Yeah.
Excellent 2-3-5.
But basically, you know, he chose to go
He's
this
got
way.
That
that's the
one
whole
car.
Thing.
Yeah.
He chose, you know, he got another car. He chose to
he
go on his own.
With
but he didn't
Wonderful
want
Wonderful end shot on his character. That's great. On a road of all things. He has to be on the road. Has to end on the road. That's great.
Starts on the road, ends on the road.
Yep.
Fantastic.
With no rest stops along the way.
Good film.
It's a gyro.
Are we getting...
hero.
Oh, I guess...
It's
I guess,
a hero.
Oh, you know what? It's
like
a gyro.
Sandwich.
Okay, gyrothopter.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'd have to call him an orny as opposed to a gyro. If it's... I guess it's a gyrothopter.
And how do you assign character names?
Tent lovers.
Bear claw mohawk.
I was one of the tent lovers.
I was bear claw mohawk.
That'd be really awesome, though, if say you're Bearclaw Mohawk.
There's your three editors.
David Steven with Tim Welburn. Okay, so they helped him.
Mitch Consultancy hung out at a lot of pubs. I hey, you want to be in a movie?
Yeah, good stuff. Stunt team. There's three. There's five of them.
Max Aspen?
There's five stuntmen.
I can't believe there's only five.
They played the same five guys.
Yeah.
Assistant editors, I believe it.
Oh, yes. And this was edited on film.
Wonderful sound mix for the time, too.
No avid.
Special effects guys.
This was all done on a Steenbeck or on a
Moviola. Yeah.
Yeah. Wardrobe machinists.
Get it.
They had some
funky stuff to make. So
yeah.
Acrobatics.
Truck precision stunt driver. There you go. Mechanics team. That's right.
Those guys were busy.
Look at all the mechanics. There's like 10 of them. Yeah.
I'll have to go back and look at these again and see if the names repeat. Like, okay, you have 9 jobs on this show.
Well, I think they had more money on this than Mad Max.
They didn't have as much as you would think, though.
Oh, really?
I mean, they had a lot, but they had way more than Mad Max, but
yeah.
It's astounding what they got out of their budget.
Yeah, because Mad Max, like, you want to talk about a great film for low budget. A great action film.
I'm one of
those. I'll have to catch it sometime.
Oh, I still go back and watch Mad Max, and I'm not in love with it. It's hard to watch. It's got one of the great plot points whenever the guy, he handcuffs the guy to the thing and to the car, and he says, you can either cut through your hand or cut through the car. That's a great.
I'd have to say Mad Max is broken. This is less of a sequel. Oh, there we go. CineSound Movie Tone for their library footage. Mad Max is the Road Warrior is less of a sequel to Mad Max than Mad Max is more of a prequel that was done happened to be done before the film.
Yeah.
And that the sequel is superior to it. And much broader appeal.
Like what I was saying earlier, like nowadays Mad Max would have been, you know, a short that they did in order to get funding to make this movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like that. It's like they had to, like, sell people on the idea.
I saw Beyond Thunderdome, and to me, Road Warrior is the best. I love Road Warrior the best.
Yes, on the Blu-ray, there is exit music for this. This is awesome.
Hey, by the way,
one heard when I saw it because everyone was ran out to their cars. This is the point where you heard the entire thing.
They're getting in fights. They're like throwing Molotov cocktails at each other, and you know,
I was fearing for my life, people.
Well, that's an interesting subject. Is who's the guy that wrote Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid?
William Goldman
was on a panel one time of different filmmakers and writers, and William Goldman has a philosophy or a hypothesis that no sequel matches the original of the films. And he's like, name me one. Well, George Miller was on the panel, and he goes, I take offense to that. I totally made Road Warrior because I didn't have enough money in Mad Max 2 or Mad Max, so I wanted to make the sequel to tell the story the way I wanted to tell it in the first place. And William Goldman conceded this. You're right. That is one of the few sequels that have actually surpassed the original. So, but that's William Goldman's philosophy, not mine.
The Empire Strikes Back.
But I know that you can bring that up.
There's a few.
But that was what the panel was, and that was a story. So, but right. George Miller took much umbrage to that.
Well, I think.
He should have.
I mean, it's a generality, but I think that's the case, and I think why Goldman probably brought it up is that was the case that it used to be that you make a film, and then you say, fine, make another film. We're going to give you half the budget. That's what happened with the Planet of the Apes films. With each successive film, they had less and less money, but we're expected to still pull in, you know, the audience. After five films, like, okay, that's it, we're done. You know, there's not enough to.
I think Goldman's probably making the point of the Matrix films, where you have tons more money and tons more story and tons more everything, and
Near, though. I think that's relatively a newer phenomenon. I guess probably 10, 20, maybe 25 years, it's like, okay, let's throw more money at the sequel. Sure. I guess after Star Wars is probably likely it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Jaws sequels, I'm sure. Never got as much money as the original Jaws did.
I don't know.
But, I don't know.
It's probably they didn't shoot for a year and a half, though. That's probably why.
And they weren't as good.
Yeah.
So, so that was a good movie.
Good stuff.
That was right, yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
Talk about a film that holds up. I mean,
it does.
Yeah.
It's
never going to not be.
No.
Yeah.
It's not going to be dated in any way because
even
of
the
environment.
Even the hairdos.
Except for the hairdos.
The hairdos still don't bother me because
they're not women. Actually as bad as
I could buy that they would come back in the post-apocalypse.
There you go.
Sure.
You never know.
I mean, chicks still crimp their hair. That's totally. And the side pony, it's coming back. The 80s are back.
They have to attract the dudes somehow in the apocalypse.
So crimp their hair.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't have food. And they don't have weapons, but have a crimping iron that you can plug into electricity that comes from somewhere. I don't know.
That's right.
From the bicycle in the back that has a little,
who says it's going to be a crimping iron? They probably use some, like I say, necessity being the mother of invention.
Braids make your hair actually look like that.
Hey, if prisoners can make a shank out of a toothbrush.
Interesting, after that whole movie, we dwell on the hairstyle.
I mean,
that's what we got out of this.
Watching it again, and especially with the Blu-ray, you realize how far ahead of his time.
The crimp warrior.
Dean Simler was so far ahead.
How well they did it at the time, because it was what it was, and how much it's inspired. I still don't think many movies have even come close to achieving what they've done here with the action sequences.
Even
awesome.
Car movies, even like the Fast and the Furious franchise, you know, where that's all they're doing. They don't waste any time on, you know, good actors. They don't waste any time on storylines.
What?
Come on, Michelle Rodriguez is good.
Oh, you mean teeth?
Paul Walker is tip top.
I actually really do like Paul Walker. I'm not even joking. I actually do. But what's that movie he did, Running Scared?
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
It wasn't Running bad. Scared, he was good in
yeah,
that.
He was great
very,
bad.
Very good.
So
yeah.
I can't really badmouth him too much. But, you know, like movies like that where it's all that. Fast and Furious. It's just about cars. That's all they're trying to sell you, and it's not even...
But Fast and Furious also, is also chock full of CG, and that's the thing.
Right.
I don't know if that necessarily makes a difference, but I think it might degrade or dig into that.
There's something about watching something so tactile like The Road Warrior.
Right.
I mean, it's all there.
Yeah.
It's really happening. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, it was all... Yeah, exactly. They didn't fake... No way to fake
a lot
anything.
Of guts in that movie. I mean, there's a lot of courage in that movie that I see while watching it.
It takes the Australians. That's what I think.
And it's great to watch Mel Gibson, you know, when
his
he was hitting
years.
It on all cylinders.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what made him who he is today.
Yep.
And on that note, any last words?
Lovely.
I'll go race you. Let's look at our cars. Come on. I dare you.
Wait, I'll get my keys.
Yeah, I'll get my Honda Fit out there.
That's right.
It's really going to it's gonna tear up the road.
Wow. Yeah.
Fun.
So we have to do Thunderdome now.
Yeah, we have to do Thunderdome now.
Yes. Two go in, one
and
comes out.
Zone?
Thunderdome.
No? Have you done that?
I think Twilight Zone will have to think about.
Do the Lithgow segment. The Lithgow segment is my favorite part of that film.
I kind of like the Joe Dante one.
I like the whole thing.
I like the Lithgow segment.
So, all right. On that note, we're going to keep on talking about Twilight Zone and stuff like that. But this has been
Curtis Nelson,
Tim McMillan,
Heidi Hilliker,
and Serge Delpierre. And this has been Film Grok. See ya.
See ya.
Bye-bye.